Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together, we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and today we're going to have a special show in that later on we're going to have a telephone interview with a guest that we had a number of years named Ron Mann, and he specialized in the Constitution, and you will find some of his stories so interesting. Let's start with a book review, and it's the book called How to Build Children with Integrity. It's by Karen Budzinski. That's spelled B-U-D-Z-I-N-S-K-I. And I want to share a lot of this book, but I don't want you to get tired of it, so I'll just do pieces of it now and then. And this is from her introduction. She says, when I was single, I was proud that my large upper flat, I could find anything blindfolded. Obsessive with order and career pursuits, I had a place for everything, and everything was in its place. When my Prince Charming came along and swept me off my feet, I answered yes to his surprise marriage proposal after informing him that I needed a lot of space and ensuring that he was as obsessive with order as I was. 2 years later, before I knew I was pregnant, my husband and I were chaperones for a church youth group on a 500-mile bike trip from Boston to upstate New York. Even though I normally have inexhaustible energy, I fatigued easily as we biked an average of 100 miles per day in the mountains. After the trip, my normal energy was nowhere in sight. Thinking I may have contracted mononucleosis, I went for tests, and much to our surprise and contrary to our carefully designed plans, we were expecting a baby. And from that moment on, our baby began changing our world. Admittedly, I was a bit hostile to this interruption of our plans. We had marked my path because I loved my job and had planned on pursuing a long-term career. But I made an 80-degree turn and notified my employer that I would be staying at home to raise our child. Immediately, I began to be conscientious about what I was eating and doing, staying away from anything that could be harmful to our baby. Everything my husband and I did suddenly revolved around our soon coming child. We prepared a room. We began to read up on parenting. We read to our baby before he was born. I changed my workout schedule to accommodate pregnancy. When the moment came that we held our firstborn child in our arms, we knew that all our decisions from that point on would be with his best interests in mind. Our personal pursuits seemed to be of little worth compared to making a future filled with opportunity for our child. Not only would we do anything to catch his attention or make him laugh, but also from that point on we would do anything we could and sacrifice anything we had to make his life better. As I was beginning to read this book called How to Build Children with Integrity by Karen Budzinski, I thought about God and his love for us and everything that he has done. We begin to get so involved in the busyness of our lives that we forget we have a Heavenly Father who has done everything in his power to prepare for us. And it should give parents courage, too, to recognize that the perfect parent still had some children, Adam and Eve, that led us all into where we are today, led us down this path of a sin-filled world. That being said, we need to focus upward, always upward. And I hope that you can get a chance to read this book, How to Build Children with Integrity. The next time we talk about this book, I'm going to talk about the Eve Syndrome. It's a very fascinating concept, very simple, and just the words probably help you recognize it. But it has to do with being grateful. And that brings me to talking about gratitude. I don't know if you struggle with depression, but depression runs in my family. And I see even my grandchildren, there's a couple of them that struggle with depression. And as they hit their teen years, it even is more exaggerated for them. And so we have worked on things that would help them overcome depression. And there are many things that you can do, but I'm just going to talk about some simple things that you could begin this very day. And one of the things that helps with depression is gratitude. In fact, people who have gone through extreme loss often say that the only thing that pulls them out of that mourning process is when they begin to be grateful. Grateful for all the experiences that they've had. And this really hit home with me because in 1 year, I lost my younger sister, my father, and my mother-in-law. And a few years before that, I had lost my mother and my father-in-law. And both experiences took a toll physically on me as well as emotionally. But when I lost my younger sister, I think that just about did me in, because you can't lose that sibling. That sibling is the closest relationship. It should be the closest relationship that you have on this earth, because you have a shared upbringing, you have a shared beginning. And then this end of her life, we couldn't share. I mean, I wished we could. I begged the Lord, why couldn't it be me? She still had young children at home to raise. And as sad as I knew my children would be if something should happen to me, they were all, you know, great adults with children of their own and leading totally independent lives. And I went to grief counseling, and I did all the things that they said. But it really was when I began to be grateful for the fact that I'd had a wonderful relationship with my sister, and I had wonderful memories that I could be grateful about. Or my father, I was grateful for all of the interesting things. And so both of them now, I'm writing a book, and hopefully I'll get it done sometime this year. But I'm writing a book about my sister's life. And there are times, of course, that I cry, but there are other times that I just smile. And then there are times that I laugh out loud, because God in His great mercy gives us that release of stress in being grateful and being joyful. You know, the Bible tells us, rejoice always. And the Apostle Paul was saying that while he was imprisoned and knowing that the outcome was probably not going to be that great. So as you're thinking about gratitude as an antidote for depression, and of course it's a great antidote for children who aren't grateful at all, you can go to my Pinterest. Now, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not that good with Pinterest. I'm just learning it. But I have their 15 best gratitude activities for kids, and one of them is a scavenger hunt. And I really liked doing it. I almost wanted to do it today. And then the other is just some simple games and some other pins that you can follow. But I would love to hear how you did that. And that's another thing, because I'm not that good with technology. If you go to my Homeschool Companion Facebook page, you really can't leave any messages there. But you can go to Rose Gamblin and leave messages there. So My Pinterest is, you know, www.pinterest.com/mrgamblin2. So I just found that out. I must have had this Pinterest for a very long time. Didn't know what to do with it. My Facebook page is www.facebook.com/rgamblin. That's easier to find. There you can write or message me, and I promise I'll befriend you, especially if you send a message saying, I heard you on the radio, and that way we can talk together, because I often feel like it's a one-way conversation. I would love to get reactions. And speaking of that, there's one more way. If you call our number, 301-824-3162, and leave a message, I can take those messages, and I'm going to have a little segment where your words or your ideas can also be aired. So you don't have to feel intimidated by doing a whole interview, though I would love to interview with you, but you can at least contribute ideas. God does not have the gifts to just one person. He just spreads them out, and it gives us the privilege of being a co-laborer with Him. So if you have a great idea about gratitude, or an idea on how to fight depression, or how you conquered depression, please don't hesitate to either message me through Facebook with your experience, or call 301-824-3162 and leave a message there. Now, if Mr. Gamblin picks up or I pick up, you can still say, I'm just calling to leave a message, and we'll arrange it so that it can be recorded. Well, I have to take a break now, but when we come back, we're going to listen to this segment from our archives with an interview of Ron Mann. We'll be right back.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. mrgmediaministries.com.
Welcome back. I promised I would share with you an interview we had in our archives with Ron Mann, Ronald M. Mann. He lived in Idaho at the time. Prior to that, he served as the deputy director of the Commission on the Bicentennial of the Constitution, and he was a former assistant to President Reagan. I so appreciated speaking to him in this interview, and also I had the privilege of going with him to Mount Vernon and just enjoying some of the history through his eyes. So without any more discussion, I'm going to turn the time over to this interview. Yes, and I am so happy to introduce to you Ron Mann, whom I consider a brilliant patriot. He served as the deputy director for the Commission on the Bicentennial of the Constitution and worked for President Ronald Reagan. Ron, welcome to Education Currents. How did you get to become the deputy director of the commission?
It's a real long story. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, we want to hear it.
All right. When I was working for President Reagan, among my tasks was put together the boards and commissions, and I kept watching for the Congress to submit to us a bill on establishing a constitutional commission. Nothing happened. And so I got very concerned, so I called one of my friends who worked over on the Senate Judiciary Committee and said, hey, look, you guys are dead. You haven't done anything on the Constitution, therefore I'm going to talk to the President. We're going to issue an executive order or a resolution of some sort ourselves. So I drafted up executive order, which just happened to be something you could use in Congress verbatim. And so I talked to my friend again and said, okay, we've got an executive order. We're going to release it to get this thing going. He says, Ron, hold off. Give me 24 hours. And I said, you got 24 hours and that's all. Well, within a couple hours, I had a call from the chairman of the Senate committee, and an hour later, a call from the chairman of the House committee said, are you telling, or is it correct that we've been told you the president can issue an executive order? And I said, yes, sir. And they got kind of concerned and said, we'll be back with you. So both of them said that. Well, About 2 hours later, they called back and said, look, do you think you could bootleg us a copy of it? And I stuttered and said, you know, I don't know whether that would be right or not. Let me think about it. I'll call you back. So I went a few minutes. I knew the answer would be given. They called back. They said, okay, I can risk it. Send one of you guys over. I'll send it over in a sealed brown envelope. So about an hour later, one guy comes over. About another hour later, the other one comes over. So they take back this proposal, and the next day, they release their resolution in House and Senate, and lo and behold, it's verbatim, the one that I had drafted for the president. Now, what they didn't know, the president hadn't even seen it, didn't know anything about it. I just decided we had to have this, and so they signed off on it, created a commission, and provided salaries for funds for 15 commissioners, a director, and a deputy director, etc. Well, that was in 1984. I went home the latter part of that year because I had some health problems, and besides, I wanted to watch my son play football. It was his last year, and he was an all-star type. So I went home. Before I went, the president called me and said, look, we don't want you to go home. I'll make a deal. You can go and be ambassador to Austria and rest. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. I really appreciate the offer. People would kill for it, but I owe my son something. He's more important right now than being an ambassador. Besides, I don't look good in striped pants. And actually, ambassadors do not do anything policy, so I really wasn't impressed with being an ambassador. He said, well, if we need you, will you come back? And I said, yes. So I went home, and he called me back 6 minutes later to go and do some negotiation in Vienna with some countries, and I came back from that. And about 3 months later, I got a call from the Chief Justice Office. I had prepared a proposal for the Bicentennial Commission on what they had it to do. It was a book about 2 inches thick, giving them all the things they needed to do for a bicentennial. What I had done is read the three previous celebrations and concluded they had done some things right, most of them wrong, so I wrote this proposal up to try to get it all right. And so when I left, I gave it to Ed Meese, Bill Clark, and who else? One other guy. And a copy to the president. Well, when the commission was approved, which I gave to the president, he signed off on it. See, the law came over, then we put the commission together and then signed off on it. Then he provided to the chairman, who was, I don't know whether I can tell you this story or not.
top secret.
Okay.
The chief justice of that time was getting kind of old. He'd be 80 in 1987, and we really needed a younger, more vigorous chief justice. So I had proposed, let's make him the chairman of the commission. Then when he turns 80, he'll be running the Bicentennial Commission, and we can appoint someone else to be the chief justice, or get a new chief justice. The president thought that was a good idea. So we did that. We talked to chief justice, and he agreed to do it, but we needed to kick it off earlier. So as a result, I was more or less running the commission for the first 6 months, so he came on board, and then we had to the 50, and away we went. We got him on the commission, which was okay, and we got the chance to put in a new chief justice who was Redland, who did a good job. But anyway, so that's what happened. Well, when I went home, the chief justice called my office and said, why didn't you submit your name for the director or deputy director of the, for the director of the commission? I said, well, you know, I gave you the plan how to do it, and, you know, I've spent a lot of time in D.C., and I'd rather stay home. And he said, well, would you think about it? I said, yes. Then he called the president of my company. I was a senior executive with Boeing Company. The president called, said, Ron, what are you doing now? And I said, well, he wants me to come back, and I don't want to go back. He said, you better go back. And then another very important person in my life called and said, Ron, you get back there. That's where you need to be. I said, yes, sir. See, it had happened when they called me to come back to work for the president of the United States. It was the second day they had moved into the White House. What had happened was all the effort they'd put on putting together people for the various positions in national security, foreign policy, and intelligence had gotten lost or stolen. We didn't know what. And they had to put them together. So they went over the House and Senate Armed Committees and said, look, we're in panic. We need to pick somebody that knows about these areas, that knows the people that can do it. And so they each came back with three names. And to this day, I cannot explain. My name was number one on both lists. So the president then called me, and I said, no, I helped him as a foreign policy on his transition committee. said, you know, I don't want anything. When I was there, they wanted me to help in one of the positions, which I turned down. And so they called the president, then they called another person. And so that's why the president of the company was mad and said, here you go again. Why are you so difficult to deal with? It's an opportunity for it. I said, I don't want to go work in the White House. So eventually I did go back. And the same thing happened on the commission when they had received 174 names for director, and they had put an ad in the Wall Street Journal and got all these wonderful people thinking I hadn't put mine in. And so finally a couple of senators called me and said, look, would you come back for an interview? And I said, no, I really don't want to. And then I got another call, so I went back, and I arrived late. My plane was late, and it was on a Saturday, and they were meeting, discussing what to do, and they had interviewed everybody but me, and they allotted each candidate 15 minutes. I called from the airport. It was noon. I said, you know, I apologize. I'm late. The airplanes had some problems. If you want, I'll go back home. I'm sure you've got your decision made. And they said, no, come on over. We'll talk to you while we're eating. I said, okay. So I went over, and I spent the next 2 hours with the commission telling them why I didn't want to be the commissioner and why I didn't want to be in. I told them what had been done wrong in all the other years they celebrate the Constitution. And they said, well, can you stay? We're going to make a decision at 5. And I said, no. I got to catch an airplane home at 5 o'clock. I promised my wife to take her on a vacation. I'm going to do it. If you want me, you're going to have to chase me down. So I got on the airplane, went home, and the next morning we went on vacation. And they finally tracked me down and said, we decided we wanted you. And I said, okay, I'll be back in 2 weeks. And they got upset with that. They wanted me back right away. And I said, no, I'm going to stay on my vacation. You know, I'm kind of hard-headed. I'm a date. Anyway, make a long story short, I've come to find out that when they had submitted the names, and Flawless thought to tell my Republican friends, I was nominated by the Speaker of the House at the time, who was a Democrat, and second by a Senator, Ted Kennedy.
Oh, wow.
Why the Democrats supported me, I don't know, but they did. So that's how I got to be both the deputy director and director of the commission, also while I came to work as a special assistant to the president.
Wow.
Well, God's providence in leadership. You know, when I think about this experience that we've just heard from Ron about his providential selection to the Bicentennial Committee as the director, it leads me to believe that sometimes we work just too hard to try to achieve success. Because if you gain the lessons from his experience, you have to realize that wherever we're at, whatever we are doing, if we are a child of God, God will bless our work. Whether we are ministering to that little child in our home, or whether we're teaching school, or whether we're teaching our children, whether we're cleaning the bathrooms, whether we're working out in a commercial venture, whether we're doing a business, whatever we do can be God's providence. It can be to God's glory. Just like Ron Mann made his family his number one priority, and he still was able to do the things that God wanted him to do that later brought him a lot of enjoyment and a lot of satisfaction. And of course, he was a great support to President Reagan. And I hope you've enjoyed this moment in history where we've kind of looked back. You know, by the time you've lived as long as I have, you've actually experienced some of what is history now. And with that, I'm going to close this part of our show. Thank you so much for listening. We'll have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.